Revolution. This is Craig. We're at last conference in Canberra, and we're here with Kerry Campbell from Flinders University. How are you doing, Kerry?
Good, thank you, everyone, and hello to everyone out there.
And also here with Craig Brown. We've decided that an Agile conference in Australia can't exist without two Craigs being in one place. So how are you doing, Craig?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
So you gave a keynote, Kerry.
I did.
So just for those of you who don't know who you are, tell us the very brief Kerry Campbell story and how you got into this whole Agile paper in the first place.
So I've been in the IT industry for 35 years, worked in various sectors, banking, federal government, and now in higher ed. I got into Agile working with the federal government. Had to implement a project there very, very last minute and decided to use Agile and absolutely loved it. Then was told to go back to my day job and so that was quite traumatic for me. So I ended up changing organisations to actually try and implement Agile. I worked as a deputy CIO at Adelaide University, implemented full-scale Agile there and then moved to Flinders University as the CIO. So I've been there for a year now. We've implemented Agile very, very quickly there, changed the culture and completely changed the way of working, which has been fantastic.
Excellent. It's sort of unusual, Craig, isn't it, that CIOs come from a background of, delivering projects at that level, but B, actually having Agile experience on the ground. So that's awesome that you can bring that to the organisation.
Yeah, look, I'm an ex-BA. I call myself a CIO. I'm really the chief impediment officer. I'm the blocker remover, and that's my role.
You said you implemented Agile quite quickly, and that's on the back of many years of working with Agile teams. You've done a couple of introduction to Agile kind of transformation things. So why faster this time? How did it happen?
Well, I think I'm walking the talk. I've learned a lot of things from the implementations that I've done. So going through the continuous improvement mindset, the things that I learned, the things that hurt me, the things that we did well, the things that we needed to stop doing. And so this implementation at Flinders, one of the drivers that I had for that was not to be the driver behind it, to actually seed it with everyone and let everyone take it, which has worked in such an amazing way, rather than being the whip hand that implements it.
Right, so instead clearing the impediments and modelling behaviour.
Correct. Changing the language with business, calling them customers. If you come from the education sector, you know that an academic doesn't like being called a customer. It'd rather stab you in the eyeball. But just changing the language so that they can see and be engaged in working with Agile and using the language of Agile.
Right. Yeah, I really liked in the talk, and you had a few technical issues, so we didn't get to see some of the artifacts, but I did like the fact how you had taken your leadership team and had really enforced those values of them standing at a wall and talking about their progress. But I really liked the way that you said that project managers couldn't stand in, that your leaders had to be able to talk to the initiatives that were going on.
And we did that very publicly, so the staff can see that we're muddling through it as well. And it was, in the talk I also talked about opening the kimono. And it's really important as leaders, we don't have all the right answers. We are muddling along and we are making mistakes, but we're learning from those mistakes as well. So we have a very public stand-up where we talk about the work. Yes, I don't like my leaders having anyone substitute for them because they really intimately need to understand the work. They're my next level blocker removers. They need to understand that work.
And how was their reaction to that? I mean, because universities, be criticised for being a little bit like government we're hearing here in Canberra.
Yeah, IT in the 80s.
Being laggards. So how did they deal with this, you coming in and making this, this change?
I started on September 11, so I think I was a bit like a plane crashing into the university. I just completely obliterated things that were around there. As I said before, I would have called it waterfall meander. But what happened was I came in and had all these whirlwind ideas and I was running at a pace and I was taking them with me at that pace. So training them, having lots of conversations. My role is as a storyteller to help people move through this change. The more stories that I told, the more they heard about it, the more that they got on board. The leadership team just noticed the difference and started feeling the difference. As I said, I'm a sensing feeling person, so I felt different when I was working in Agile projects and I wanted people to have that same experience. And the leadership team have just taken this and run it, and they call Agile our way, mm-hmm. which is the Flinders way of doing Agile. So they've really taken ownership of it and really taken hold of it, and and are running with it in a way that it's their own, which is, as I said in the talk, each organisation is very different. You've got to find what resonates with your staff, with your customers, and let them work at their own pace. Mm. You know, I've got some teams that are, I would say, a 5-star agile, but I've got other teams that are 1 or 2, but that's okay because they're still going on the same journey.
Mm. Well, one of the things I think you said in the talk that I think resonated with people, there was a gasp, clicked a gasp in the room, was when you said that you had eliminated your PMO in the organisation. And so there was, I think it was 2 sides of the talk, wasn't it, Craig? There was the people who were the practitioners, and there was all the agile coaches going, yay! but tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's a struggle that lots of people have, is letting go of that traditional approach.
And look, and I did it in Adelaide University as well, and then the leadership changed. And someone came in who didn't understand the model and put a whole pile of governance back on it. And the business were like, whoa, we don't want this. We were working in such a good way. What's happening? In Flinders, I've taken the PMO away, and the business is so much closer to IT. And that's what you need, because you don't need that middleman to sort out your resources or sort out the project or write the project papers. For the teams, if your team is cross-skilled, cross-functional and collaborating, that's all you need. And you know, we don't need a heavy weight PMO slowing us down, and that's what we found was happening. We have got our finances, I said it broke our finances as well. I've now argued for a 5-year envelope of money, and we stop projects that aren't working, put them back into the framework, and do the next one that the business is ready to work. We might not be ready, or the business might not be ready. It doesn't matter. We don't hold on to that money and try and build the sandcastle towards the end of the year. We're saying, well, it's not ready. This one is. Let's go. Okay, you're ready now. Let's go. So it's a better way of modelling that work and the workload that goes through that model.
So we're in a government town. So yep. I suspect there's a lot of people sitting in the audience going, but where does the reporting go?
Yeah.
And where happens with the risks and the control? So I guess just for our listeners, I'm sure there was the naysayers in the university as well. How did you deal with those things?
So they're actually getting more reporting than before. So but before they were getting big, long, laborious reports that no one really read. As I said, I've got the A3 business case, which is really very succinct and very easy to read, but it's actually incredibly hard to write because it's not waffle, it's all succinct. The business analysts had a lot of trouble getting used to that, but now that they're on board, you know, they're very, very well written. We have 1-page reports that go to the board about the state of the project, and that it highlights the milestones, which are sprints. Then we have our Kanban board reporting. We've opened our Kanban boards up to the whole entire organisation. So they have viewer access to our Kanban boards. So they can actually see all the work that we put into those Kanban boards. So we're super transparent in that respect. As far as the risks go, we state in the project business case what the high-level risks are. But with Agile, you don't have to have a risk log, because you're actually dealing with those risks every day in your stand-ups. What's working, what's not working, what needs to be moved. So we don't have a risk log anymore. You know, that was one of the primary roles of a PMO, is to maintain the risk log and make sure the risk went up on the risk register. But we don't have them anymore, because we're actually dealing with those issues there and then, not towards the end of the project. So I would say they're 100% happier not having a PMO.
Yeah, I mean, it's all we teach, right? But, you know, again, I can hear people listening going, but surely you must have to write those things down.
Well, look, and we have, as I said, we have our governance groups that are run by our customers, not by IT. We have 1 seat on those governance groups. But we just prioritised $48 million worth of work in a day with the business, and they're all on board with those changes. And they're not pie-in-the-sky things yet. They're just very hygienic IT work that needs to be done, and that was done by a business. So you know, they're really understanding that, and they're understanding the complex nature of IT, but understanding what needs to be prioritised. So you couldn't do that before if you had a PMO, because the PMO had keys to the castle of, you know, we need to do this work because it's X amount of money, not based on the business priority.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I wanted to, you had the Heart of Agile slide up there at one point, so I wanted to ask you about what you're thinking about the future of this agile journey is.
Look, I think for me, looking at DevOps and what's happening in DevOps is where Agile was about 10 to 12 years ago. Some people were doing it. Most people said we'd like to do it, but didn't know how to do it and were scared to do it. But I think those two are inextricably linked. You need to work closely with the customer to deliver more often with the customer. So I see the genesis of that is where we're heading. But the heart of Agile is the nexus of that, because it's taking the complexity out of Agile. Mm-hmm. You know, as I said before in my talk, I hate Agile. I hate extremists of any sort. I hate Agile extremists that say you need burn down charts, you need this, you need that to be running Agile. I think what the organisation needs is those simple tenets of deliver, trust, reflect, and
improve.
And improve. Yeah. So
your,
simple when...
Because in your talk, you were saying like what Agile practices brought to you in your organisation was like you just like made convoluted processes and systems simple, and then by removing that kind of noise, you're able to be more effective as an outfit.
Correct. Right with the customer. Yeah. They were understanding... We were making the complex simple.
Mm.
And that's what's going to be the future of IT. As I right. said, for me, I want to disintermediate IT from IT. Mm. I think anyone, especially in the CIO level, who's thinking about, well, we just keep the lights on, we're looking at cost reductions, they're dead, they're dinosaurs. If they're not dead in their organisations, they soon will be, but they don't know it yet.
Mm.
If you look at the new model of a CIO, it's someone who works in fixing this chaos of the systems, the legacy systems and the things that we've built, making things more simple, API-based, containerization, looking at simplifying those systems so they're plug and play now and not, you know, we need someone who has a screwdriver over here constantly on call in case something breaks. We need to be removed from that so that we can get closer to the customer and work on their innovation. Right, that'll push the bounds of IT like nothing else.
Mm.
You see now with the startup communities, people have an idea and just go out and do it.
Mm.
And I think the nexus of that and you know, institutional IT is where we'll be going. We'll be working closely with small groups, with our customer, designing things that they need to propel them forward. I think the old days of manufacturing IT, which is what I see the old ways of IT, are gone. You know, manufacturing in Australia is dead, and that sort of delivery is dead.
Yeah, right.
Because people with a credit card can go and get a cloud service for HPC, they can get a cloud service for infrastructure, platform as a service. So, you know, we've got to keep pace with where the world is going with that. And I think that the simplicity of the Heart of Agile model is the key to getting business come along on that journey with us.
Right.
Yeah, cool. Is that something, so you bring up the Heart of Agile, is that something you've explicitly spoken to your business people about, or is it more just something you work into the conversation?
I do now that I know that we did it. Like, we were intrinsically doing that at the Adelaide implementation, because Adelaide Uni implementation, because we wanted to simplify things. They had shadow IT, business hated IT, they were buying their own cloud services, paying stupid money for it, getting poor service because they didn't, you know, IT of this size is agnostic. We don't care who it is, but we want to get the best deal. We're the brokers of that. And so it was about they had no trust, poor delivery. So we as I said, to change the culture, I need to deliver, get that trust from the customer, get everyone changing the way that they dealt with the customer. Half of them hadn't even seen the customer. When I was at the Department of Human Services, when my development staff made a change, I would make them go down to the counter, on the front counter, and watch as their system that they implemented worked. And, you know, they're used to designing, you know, the greatest green button or the collects the most information, but when they're watching a counter officer and someone who's in front of them that is, you know, on drugs, rabid, ready to kill them, and we're waiting for this donut to stop spinning while it collects all this information, they soon realised that they came back pretty much white, saying, well, okay, that's really bad. But they're sitting in their ivory tower going, yeah, this is the best code that I've ever written. But they're not understanding the impact that that has on the front line and their customer. And that's what I did in Adelaide University. We did a implementation of an app for for classes. No one had done that before. I said to the developer, okay, we'll go down to the hub, and we'll buy pizza and ask students to play with it and get some feedback. He goes, why would we do that? And I said, because that's our customer. So I sent him down there and he came back and goes, wow, I was so off base with the things that we were thinking. They had all this stuff that we didn't even think was important. Well, they're the customer, so they're super important. We sent that app out and we had 12,000 downloads in a day.
Right, wow.
Because we listened to the customer. Mm. We had a feedback channel there where the customer could feedback straight away. Mm. Completely changed the way that IT worked from that minute on.
What are the, I guess for government experience as well as university experience, both those industries are plagued a little more than, your traditional corporate, because in a corporate, that innovation, shareholders and,
yep.
and all that kind of stuff, make money, you can go for that innovation thing. But government and education, to a certain extent, has to be more stable. So we yep. often talk about government having to, traditionally has to go slow because of the stability. So how have you sort of addressed that issue in yeah. organisation? It's a little more risk averse, perhaps, than...
They are. And when I first went to my first university, it was like going back to IT in the 80s. But that was good because I did IT in the 80s, so I know how to survive that. But the thing is that it's because of the nature of the organisation. So if you go to a public listed company, they've got CEOs that make a demand. So it's command and control. So they're basically saying this will happen, so the whole organisation jumps. With the government or with the university, you've got a head that says we would like to do this, and then it becomes a consultative practice. That's where the model comes in. The Heart of Agile model comes in as extremely important, because until you deliver and get that trust, you have to go through those rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds of discussion about why this is really good for the organisation, how this can actually improve the organisation, how it can be more efficient. But if you do some key projects, so what I did in all of the organisations is picked a project that was a problem, fixed it in a short amount of time and with more benefits than they thought, and just talked about those benefits. And then they sort of, after you do that time and time and time again, and I did it in infrastructure projects where people said, oh, you can't work agile in infrastructure. Well, I did. Hmm. And, doing it with the business and doing a business project and doing a project with COTS off the shelf. Did all of those things where people said, oh, you can't do it in that sort of project. And when you get those results, then you get the trust of the organisation when you say, well, I think we should go this direction. And they go, okay, well, we believe you. Let's do it. Let's take that step off the edge. You better be right, but let's take that step off the edge.
Yeah. Craig and I run meetup groups. So Craig runs the meetup group in Melbourne. I run the meetup group in Brisbane when I'm ever there. Adelaide's been one of those towns that's been a little bit of a sleeper. I know
yep.
that I haven't been there for a few years now because there just hasn't been Agile work there. But when I have been, I think the Agile group was non-existent a couple of years ago. But it seems to just have taken off. Boom. I mean, Craig, yep. you guys are about to, you're going to run a last conference there next year, I think.
Some conference, yeah.
There's Be First.
First has been announced, hasn't it?
Yep, it's next month.
Yeah, so sort of taken off. What's the community like in Adelaide? Just give it a bit of sense.
It is becoming a burgeoning community. We were pretty much the drivers at the beginning. It was very hard doing your day job and trying to drag everyone else along. So I've really shared all of the artifacts that we have with all of those other groups. I've spoken to SA Power Networks, I've spoken to SA Water, I've spoken to all the other groups there, and we share all that we have where and talk to other universities as well. There's no, because we've got the tyranny of distance, there's no, this is our IP and you can't have it, and which I think has created a more collaborative community. Bendigo Bank is a big driver down there, BAE system. So we're getting more of a startup feel in the community down there, which is great. We've got Tonsley, we've got Adelaide Uni, we've got ICC at Uni SA, and it's becoming a really interesting place. If you think about it, we have the same basic components of Silicon Valley. We have a medical precinct, research precincts, three universities, space now there, defence is down there. And we have a wine district. So, they're the same components that Silicon Valley had when it started. When Elon Musk came to Adelaide for the Tesla battery, he was like, well, okay, this place has got something about it. And his visit has sparked a lot of other people sort of saying, okay, it is a sleepy old town, but there's some really cool things going on down there.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, you know, a really good dark fibre network with SaperNet, which is a dark fibre network that goes to research and education institutes. No other state has that, but we had it because of the tyranny of distance. We've created ourselves, worked with government, worked with universities. We've all put our, you know, political views aside and worked together to create these things. So it's kind of a sleeper, but it's going to explode into some really crazy things in the future.
Yeah, it's great to see.
That's great.
Well, Gary, it's been great chatting to you. We've got a conference going on. I think noise is going to start up in just a moment. So, but if people want to know more about what you're up to and you know, what's happening in uni, where can they find out more?
Yeah, they can hit me up on LinkedIn, or I'm on Twitter, Kerry Campbell, at Kerry Campbell 67. And I'm always putting stuff about what we're doing there and throwing tidbits out there for people to get excited about. But yeah, LinkedIn is a good way to get me. I'm having a look at that. And also contact the university if you want to. Come and visit and see what we're doing.
And Greg, thanks for sitting in. And if people want to know more about you, where do they find out some more about you?
I'll be in the pub.
Yeah. It's actually a good place to find
people. I'll be with Craig.
People know where to find
me. If you're in Melbourne, just hit up Craig and
he'll
take you out for a drink. You can get me at craig@theoutdoorrevolution.com. So it's one thing we like to finish with, is with a Viva la Revolution. So guys, you want to join me in that?
Yep.
Viva la Revolution!
Thank you.